You're listening to Forecast, the marketing podcast for professional services leaders. If you're looking to generate more leads, win more deals, and take your firm to the next level, this show is your shortcut.
Hey there, and welcome back to the show. Today we are on part two of our three-part series on how to build a marketing plan for your firm. Now, in part one, we covered the very first step in the process, which is to conduct a marketing audit. And we looked at the five questions that you need to answer to prepare yourself for what's coming next, which is strategy. So if you haven't listened to the last lesson on the marketing audit yet, you can check out the episode right before this to get caught up. Now, if we think of the marketing audit as defining where you are, which is a critical first step, then the strategy is about defining where you're going. And then finally, the playbook, which we'll get to in part three, will determine how to get there. So today we're talking about strategy, and we're going to look at the same five questions that we covered in the previous lesson on the audit, but now we're going to look forward. We're going to use the data and the insights that you gathered in the audit phase to make some decisions about how to proceed. Now, I can't possibly cover this topic in its entirety in a short lesson like this, but I'm going to try to give you some of the tools that you can use to make these decisions on your own. So let's dive in. The first question was, how do you make money? Now, in the audit stage, you should have identified the different ways that your firm currently earns revenue and hopefully identified some opportunities for growth. The key here is you want to maximize your revenue and minimize your time. That is the name of the game in professional services, because one way or another, you are ultimately selling your time and your staff's time. So the more that you can earn on that time, the better. But the critical mistake that most firms make here is they focus on maximizing revenue per engagement or per deal. And that's really short-sighted. Instead, you should focus on maximizing the lifetime value of each client, not just the value of each deal. And let me explain what I mean by that. See, there are some clients who will buy from you once and maybe never again. But there are also clients who will buy from you repeatedly over and over again over a longer period of time. Now, when it comes to the one-shot clients, sure, make sure you have a healthy margin on that deal and you're making the money that you want to make. But for those longer-term clients, it doesn't really make sense to just optimize for that one deal or for the first engagement. You should be optimizing for the lifetime value of that relationship as a whole. And to do that, you need to be tracking two really important numbers. The first is how much it costs you to acquire a client, also called a customer acquisition cost, or CAC, which is a measure of how much you're spending on marketing and on sales for each new client that you bring in. And the second number that you should be tracking is how much profit you expect to earn for the lifetime of your relationship with a client. So that is the sum total of all the profit on all the deals that you expect to sign with a given client. And then the math becomes really simple. It's lifetime value minus customer acquisition cost equals net profit per client. And when you have those numbers worked out, a few things become really clear. First of all, you now know how much you're willing to spend to acquire a client. Because if you know that a client is worth, say, $20,000 over the lifetime of your relationship with them, then don't gripe if you need to spend $1,000 or $2,000 on marketing to acquire that client. Because if you spend $1,000, that's going to create a net profit of $19,000. And that's a pretty good deal. And secondly, when you take a lifetime value approach, you'll begin to look at each client relationship beyond just the first deal, and then you can begin to structure your offerings in a way that maximizes lifetime value. So let me make this more concrete for you. How many times have you pitched an expensive project to a new client only to have them walk away? Now, you probably justified that price tag because you thought the work was worth it, and you were probably right. Now, if you were only concerned about the profitability of that one deal, then you probably played it right. You got to make sure that you earn enough on that deal to be profitable. And if you're going to lose money on the deal or not make enough, then it's good that they walked away. But what if you charged less on that first deal? Or what if you pitched a smaller project and gave the client an easier way to start a new relationship with you? If you did that, Do you think the client would stick around past the first engagement? Do you think maybe they'd stick around for another few engagements? Do you think that if you provided enough value early on in the relationship, then they may keep working with you over and over and over again and become a long-term client? Those are the kinds of opportunities that you might be losing out on if you don't focus on maximizing the lifetime value of every client. Now, that's all the time that we have to spend on the business model side. There are a million ways you could structure your offering. We can't get into all of them. Just make sure that the numbers work out. Lifetime value minus customer acquisition cost should generate a healthy profit that you're happy with. On to question two, who do you serve? Now, in the audit, we identified the different types of clients that you work with. And now I want you to take a look at all of those clients and all of those categories that you created. And I want you to ask yourself, which of these clients are the best fit for your firm? And fit can be based on a number of factors, including profitability. Again, lifetime value. Which clients represent a higher lifetime value? It can be based on access. Which clients do you have better access to? Do you have a presence in certain markets over others? It can be based on positioning. Which clients are you best suited to help? Which are the ones that you're made to serve? Which are the clients who, when they find you, say, you're exactly the person or the firm that I've been looking for? It can be based on market penetration. Maybe you already have a really strong presence in certain markets that you can build on. And finally, it can be based on satisfaction. Which clients do you most enjoy working with? However you choose to make this decision, the goal here is to narrow your focus as much as possible so you can start getting some leverage in the markets you choose to play in. Now, that might mean catering to one group of clients. Maybe it's two or three. There's no hard and fast rule here. You just want to identify the ideal clients that are the best fit for your firm so that you can then begin to sharpen your positioning, sharpen your messaging, and sharpen your targeting to reach more of them. The third question is, what do you sell? In the last lesson, we explained how what you're really selling is not the service or the solution. It's the benefit that your service provides to the client. Now, let me tell you a little story to make that more concrete. This is a story that Seth Godin shares in his book, All Marketers Are Liars. He talks about a wine glass company that you've probably heard of called Riedel. Riedel makes these very expensive hand-blown wine glasses. And when you go to their website, you'll see them make this claim that the taste of a wine or a beverage is enhanced by the shape of the glass. So the right wine needs the right glass to bring out its flavor, to bring out its profile. Now, for those of us who don't drink wine or aren't wine connoisseurs, this is just ridiculous. How can the shape of a glass affect the taste of a beverage? It makes absolutely no sense. And in fact, scientists have actually conducted double-blind taste tests that proved that people cannot tell the difference between a Riedel glass and a no-name glass when they're wearing a blindfold. But as Seth Godin pointed out, no one drinks wine blindfolded. People believe that wine tastes better in a Riedel glass because that's what they want to believe. They want to believe that a $100 glass is superior to a $10 glass. Now, why do they want to believe that? Well, it could be because they want to impress their friends with their expensive wine glass selection. It could be because they can't fathom drinking an expensive wine in a cheap glass. It could be a number of things. But the bottom line is that if they want to believe it, then the story becomes true. So when you ask yourself, what am I really selling? You need to consider, what does my customer really want to buy? What story are they looking to actualize through this purchase? In the case of Riedel, it was the story that wine tastes better in an expensive glass. So you need to figure out what kind of story your buyers want to believe, and then you need to sell it to them. Question number four is, how do you communicate? Now, this is tied really closely to the last question, because once you know what you're selling, once you know what your buyers want to believe, once you know the story that they want to hear, then you need to tell that story. Now, the best resource that I found to help with this is a 7-part storytelling formula developed by a gentleman named Donald Miller of StoryBrand, and I'm going to link to their site in the show notes, but here's the gist of the formula. Every movie, Every novel, every screenplay has the same seven storytelling elements. These seven elements represent the story structure that human beings are wired to respond to. So here they are. First, there is a hero. Now, the hero is your ideal client. It's the customer that you seek to serve. Second is that hero has a problem, which happens to be the problem that you solve. Third is when the hero meets a guide. You're the guide. You're the problem solver. You're the mentor who's going to make that problem go away. Fourth is when the guide presents the hero with a plan. These are your services. These are your solutions. This is how you're going to help the hero or your client get past their problem. Fifth is the call to action. This is your initial offer. This is the first deal. This is the consultation. This is where you rally the buyer to make a decision. And sixth is the result in either success. So if the client buys and they purchase your services and they purchase your solutions and they work with you, then the problem goes away and you describe what success looks like. Or the seventh element is failure. That if the client doesn't buy, if they don't work with you, if they don't take the plan that you put together for them, then here's what happens. This is the storytelling framework that you should be running all of your messaging through. Every time you speak to a client, everything you say on your website, everything you communicate about your firm needs to align with that story. Finally, question number five is, how do you find clients? Chances are the way that you find clients right now is probably a bit sporadic and not very organized and probably not very scalable. And what we want to do now is take what's already working for you, which we identified in the audit, and we want to organize that into a marketing funnel. And then we want to identify opportunities to enhance what's already working. Now, a quick definition of a marketing funnel. Simply put, a marketing funnel is the process that buyers go through before doing business with you. It's a process that you direct from the very first point of engagement to the point where they're ready to sign and to buy. It is a deliberate set of actions that you want buyers to take that culminates in a transaction. So here's a basic funnel structure that you can use. It's called the ARC funnel: attraction, retention, and conversion. And the first stage at the top of the funnel is attraction. This is where new clients discover you for the first time. It could be through referrals, it could be through LinkedIn, guest blog posts, affiliates, partners, whatever it may be. This is where traditional lead generation typically happens. The second stage of the funnel, and this is the middle of the funnel, is called retention. This is where you want to build a relationship with new prospects. That after they discover you in the attraction phase, they're probably not ready to hire you. At least most of them aren't ready yet to hire you. So you want to build a relationship and build authority so that when they are ready, you become the obvious choice. And finally, the third and final stage of the funnel is conversion. This is where you make the sale. This is where you convert the buyers that are ready to buy into paying clients. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to map everything you're doing onto the three stages of this funnel. All the activities, all the tactics, all the channels that you're using, take all of that stuff and map it onto the funnel. And right away, you will see where your problem lies. And it's usually one of two things. The first is that you're not doing enough lead generation at the top of the funnel in the attraction stage, and that's why you're not seeing enough lead flow through to the bottom of the funnel. And the second problem might be that you're not doing enough to build relationships and retain prospects in the retention stage, so your lead generation at the top of the funnel isn't effective because buyers are entering your funnel and then bouncing out of it right away because there's no reason for them to pay attention and to stick around. So what I want you to do now is evaluate which stage of the funnel is your biggest problem. Is it the attraction stage? Is it the retention stage? Or is it the conversion stage? In other words, is your biggest problem that you're not attracting enough leads at the top of the funnel? Or is your biggest problem that you're not retaining enough leads in the middle of your funnel? Or is your biggest problem that you're not converting enough leads into clients at the bottom of your funnel? And this distinction is absolutely critical because most people will assume that their problem is that they don't have enough leads. And they'll then go and do all kinds of work and spend all kinds of money to generate leads when in fact their problem was never a traffic problem, it was a conversion problem. That they had enough leads to begin with, but they weren't converting enough of those leads into clients. And if that's your problem, then no amount of traffic is going to solve it. Now you might say, well, you know what, looking at this now, all stages of the funnel are a problem. You know, I don't have a good attraction strategy. I'm not retaining the few people that I do attract, and I'm not converting enough of them at all into clients. And in that case, you probably don't really have a working funnel to begin with. So what you need to do is then build what I call a minimum viable funnel, which is that you need to identify the smallest set of activities that you can execute to build a complete funnel. The goal here is to put something together that's complete and that works so that you can begin to optimize it and tweak it and to make additions to the funnel to make it more effective. So we just covered a lot of ground in this lesson. I know my head is spinning, so I can only imagine how you feel, but I do hope it was helpful and I hope it gave you some ideas on how to move forward with your marketing strategy. Now, coming up in the final part of this series on the marketing plan, we're going to look at the third step of the planning process, which is translating the strategy into a concrete and actionable marketing playbook that you can then execute. So stay tuned for that lesson. Now, if you have any questions about this lesson or any other lesson for that matter, head over to boutiquegrowth.com/ask and you can submit your questions directly to me. If you like what you hear, do us both a favor and subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can search for Forecast Marketing and you'll see the show pop up there. Subscribe and then you'll get all the latest episodes added to your feed as soon as they're released. Finally, if you haven't joined us yet, check out our free course on the 5 P's of lead generation for professional services firms, where I will walk you through a 5-step process to help you generate a flood of new business for your firm. You can get immediate access to the course by heading over to 5leadgen.com and joining us there at no cost. That's 5leadgen.com, and you can spell out 5 or use the number. Either one works. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk next time.